Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan at SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest information. And I'm David Todd at Season 8, Episode 53. And the 9-2 Steelers will take on the Cincinnati Bengals, Dave, in Monday Night Football. A big week, good week for the Steelers. Lots to get to in terms of the wrapping up the Steelers' performance, the win Sunday night, the good and the bad, which we covered a lot of Monday. We'll talk to our buddy Paul Daner Jr., who covers the Bengals here later in the show. Where do you want to start today? What do you want to hit on?
I guess we'll start. Yeah, and it is Bengals week. It just seems like yesterday we were talking to Paul and about kind of previewing that game. And time has sort of flown by here. Now already the bye week out of the way here. And you start getting into the meat of this schedule right now with games, back-to-back games against division rivals. And, of course, a game against the Patriots. And then you close it out with games against Houston and the Browns. So I think Mike Tomlin hit on some interesting things on Tuesday. So we can start going through the main talking points there.
Okay, so let's just talk about kind of, again, the Steelers, where they are injury-wise coming into this game. These games the next 2 weeks, look, obviously the Steelers are going to make the playoffs. I think that's an absolute given at this point. Things would have to go off the rails pretty badly for them to lose the division. But the reality is, if we're going to, cover all our bases and look at all scenarios, is if the Steelers were to lose the next three games, if they were lose to the Bengals, the Ravens, and the Patriots, the division's probably back open a little bit, and we'll see where things go. I mean, that means obviously the Bengals and the Ravens, who aren't over 500, would have to win a series of games as well, besides just beating the Steelers. So, the Steelers have put themselves in a position where, as I say, they a lot of things would have to go wrong for them not to lose the division here. But in terms of health, Dave, it's been a remarkable season as much as I can remember. I mean, this Joe Hayden injury doesn't seem like a season-ending injury, but we'll figure it out as we go here. But they've been generally healthy here. Juju and Vance are the guys who were kind of the question marks behind their names this week. Based on what Mike Tomlin said yesterday, he didn't sound to me overly optimistic. I mean, he didn't say, these guys are going to be ready to go Wednesday, which is, what you would hope for, having it been 2 weeks since, these guys have played. So, again, kind of big question marks behind their name. Otherwise, it seems pretty good.
Yeah, and those were the two biggest names, of course, talking about Juju and Vance McDonald. And, keep your fingers crossed. One, of course, dealing with a hamstring, and one dealing with an ankle injury that he suffered during, what was it, the kickoff of the game against the Colts, I believe, is when he got rolled up on friendly fire by James Conner. And he was able to, I guess, wrap that thing up and get back into that game a little bit. But, obviously that thing went the other direction after that contest. That's one player, David, that I've had hope for all season. Now, obviously his time prior to arriving with the Steelers was kind of marred. I mean, there was drop history. He did have drop history, and then obviously first few games with the Steelers had those drops show up on tape. But he's also put some other great things on tape as far as his blocking goes. And he's made some key catches and been able to stretch the field for the Steelers as well too. So it goes without saying that Juju's a big part of what they do now, and you obviously want him healthy and back on the field. And people are trying to paint the narrative that the Steelers really missed Juju in this win over the Packers. I think that's a false narrative, to be quite honest with you. Yes, the Steelers suffered some drops. Yes, Eli Rogers had two of them. Yes, Justin Hunter had one of them. Yes, Martavis Bryant had one of them. But let's look at the facts of the situation. As the Steelers' offense was able to do a lot of things great in that game. Third down percentage was the best it's been all season for them. Completion percentage, highest it's been all season. Yes, a lot of that 12 receptions, dump offs to your running back certainly do help with that. As I said, the third down percentage, 61.54%, highest it's been all season. Total net yards, 462, season high. Net yards passing, 341. First down, season high, 28 in a game. So, yes, obviously you want Juju back because there's a reason he's on top of the depth chart. But let's not paint this thing into something that it's not. And let's not pretend that Juju hasn't dropped a pass or two this season as well, too. And the same goes with Vance McDonald. Now, are they a better team with these two players back on the field? Absolutely. And like I said, McDonald, if he can put together stay healthy, that's another knock on him is he's been nicked up, whether it be a back or an ankle or a knee this year. He needs to stay on the field during these final five games and be the guy that we think that he can be. And Juju just needs to go back to doing what he was doing prior to sitting down for this game against the Packers here. So there's a lot to be positive about. Keep your fingers crossed. We'll know a little bit more starting probably later on today and, of course, on into Thursday when the injury report really starts getting rolling there. And then rounding out the injuries, as you said, Joe Hayden going to be out. I mean, who knows? We can sit here and speculate and think, okay, the Patriots game, he's going to be back. Yeah, I don't know if that's slam dunk. Yeah, he's all waffle.
I bet you see him by the last game of the season. But if I were just taking bets today, I would say, he's obviously, there's no question that he's not practicing this week. So to me, that means he's not going to go next week. So if he's not practicing, it's kind of those rolling 2 weeks. When he gets to back to practicing, he's probably a week away. I'm shooting. You'd like to have Joe Hayden back at 100% by the playoffs. That to me is the target date.
Yeah, and look, people saying, okay, he's off crutches, he's back on the bike. Are we really surprised by that? I mean, Mike Tomlin went out of his way initially after that injury was suffered, was saying it was a high fibula, fracture and all, and evidently, I'm obviously no doctor, but he made it sound like that was positive news there. So here we are, a couple weeks and a half away from the original injury, and it's not surprising to me that he's off crutches and he's on a bike. But look, I mean, not being on the field and doing some of the things and keeping the trying your best to keep your muscle memory and any atrophy or whatnot from happening, is going to be tough. And yeah, he is going to have to be on the field, for a few practices, more than a few maybe, before he's allowed to be turned loose there. So I understand the optimism with thinking that he might be back for the game against New England, but let's be certain here. Mike Tomlin said it in many words on Tuesday. He hasn't even asked about Joe Hayden yet because he's not to that point yet, and the game against the Patriots is 2 weeks away here. So yeah, keep your fingers crossed on him. But the fact of the matter is, he's not going to play against the Bengals, and he's not going to play against the Ravens. I think those are pretty safe assumptions right now at this point. Rounding out the injury report, Mike Mitchell and Ryan Shazier, both who apparently dinged up ankles in the game against the Packers. Mike Tomlin thinks will be fine to play against the Bengals Monday night. However, they might be limited in practice at the early portion of the week. And one player that Mike Tomlin did not mention that he mentioned after the game the other night was Alejandro Villanueva with an ankle. But that obviously didn't sound serious at the time. So seems to be, outside of maybe Joe Hayden, that might be the only unhealthy scratch, if you will, this week.
Okay, so let's talk about Cody Sensabaugh for 1 second here. I've been asked, and I'm sure you've been asked, about kind of the domino effect. And Cody Sensabaugh was not a guy who is taken from a different role in the defense and plugged into Joe Hayden's role. He was a guy who was sitting on the bench, who was the backup at outside corner, and Hayden went down and Cody Sensabaugh went back in. Do you think that there has been any domino effect of having Sensabaugh on the field that has impacted the Steelers' pass coverage in the past couple weeks?
No. Flat out, he just hasn't, you know, he's given up a couple of big plays. That's the long and short of it. If you go back to the he was in for that play against the Colts, right? Which was a big touchdown there to start off the second half. To me, that, you know, I think Mike Hilton might have played more of a, if I'm not confusing these, I think Mike Hilton not carrying the slot guy up had more to do with that play than Cody Sensabaugh did. Then you can go to the play against the Titans, and that was obvious. That was, you know, I broke that play down myself for the site. We've already talked about quarter half coverage. Once, you know, it's his job with Rishard Matthews to carry him in a one-on-one situation, you know, on that play. So definitely just a, I don't know, not a blown assignment. He just didn't, do the assignment well. And then on top of it, you're not tackling him in, who was it, Robert Golden, failing to tackle him at the whatever 20-yard line or whatever it was to me the more damning of the things that happened on that play. And then you quickly rewind back to what happened, you know, in this game against the Packers. He got beat with a double move, and when Mike Tomlin was talking Tuesday, David, about a lot of the issues that the Steelers having being, what do you say, above the neck issues, I think more of that was aimed at Artie Burns than it was at Cody.
Oh, I agree.
At Cody Sensabaugh. Cody Sensabaugh just got beaten, and, you know, we kind of joked about it on Monday. Do what you can to make sure that guy doesn't catch that pass. You know, take the 15 yards or whatever. But once again, to me, your guys are going to get beat occasionally on double moves. They all get beat on double moves. The thing is both Mike Mitchell and I think Cody had an opportunity to get him down on the ground later on in that play, and they failed to do so. So, yeah, I mean, absolutely is concerning. But there's a with Cody with what's gone on the last, you know, since taking over for Joe. But there's a reason why Joe was the starter and Cody's the number two guy. But is this having a, I guess going back to your original question, does this have any kind of a ripple effect on the rest of the defense? No, I just think you've had a couple of blown assignments and a couple of blown coverages and then failing to tackle some guys after they catch the football. And you know, that's it.
I agree. I'm with you on that. On the positive side, a lot of bests in quotes from the game, the Steelers game on Sunday night. I think Alex thought that the throw that Ben made on the sideline to Antonio Brown late in the game was Ben's best throw of the year. You suggested Martavis Bryant's move where he scored the touchdown where he beat the DB was his best release off the line of the year. I thought that AB's catch on the sideline, the toe tap, was maybe one of the best catches I've ever seen, maybe his best catch of the year, although he said the fade was a more difficult catch. We all have commented on Ben's whole throw to – Ike Taylor called it one of the best throws he's ever seen Ben make. Dave, with
that,
the
– Hey, that,
with
by the way, that's what he's always done best is that hole shot, right?
Yeah.
You know, that cover two hole shots have been – I mean, that's Ben's signature, signature kind of throw right there. When you're a young receiver and you come to the Steelers, you better master, kind of getting yourself in that cover two hole, because that's Ben, to me. I think Ben has said it as much, and I think BA said it in his book as well too. That's Ben's throw right there.
Yeah, and it's a throw there because you are throwing. You don't have to. There's not a lot of coverage reading going on that throw there. If the guy, you're throwing it past the corner in this instance that AB was able to get around the corner. So you're really only looking at the deep safety on that side of the field. So there's not a lot of reading in that throw. And, you know, the point on that throw that's not really probably been discussed enough is the move that Antonio Brown made to ensure that it's a touchdown. We've lamented the fact that the Steelers haven't been able to get guys down kind of at the 10-yard line after they've caught long passes. Well, and if that safety's got to get Antonio Brown out of bounds, and Antonio Brown just gave him a whoop, whoop, little this, little that, and away he went, and Antonio Brown strolled into the end zone. So a lot of positive things in the big process here, Dave. And I guess the question is, and you know, I joke about the Steelers having passed the eye test for a lot of fans with the wins here. And you go to Detroit, go to Indy at home here against the Packers. They're not doing it the way some people would like them to do it. What's keeping, if there's an answer, and I don't have a good one, but in your mind, what's keeping the Steelers on either side of the ball from playing 60 good minutes? Because I'm not sure on either side of the ball they've played, you know, a full 60 minutes. I mean, they're pretty damn close offensively against the Titans after, you know, a little bit of a up and down first half. They had a great, you know, second half. We've seen, you know, we've seen different halves from the defense, the Bengals game, you know, a couple other games you can point to where in the second half, you know, the team's got a total of 20 yards and no points. But we haven't seen them dominate on both sides of the ball for an entire game. What's missing?
Offensively, I think it's very generic, and many will probably view it as a cop out. Is down to down consistency, I think. Just overall down to down consistency. I mean, you watch the Patriots go on an opening on their two opening drives in a lot of situations. You know, it's just very, very crisp. If they do get a penalty, they seem to easily overcome it. They seem to have, you know, so much continuity and consistency. And I think the other thing on offense that really has stuck out all season is the fact that the running game just isn't there yet. You know, you're still having too many zero or lost yardage runs, I think. Now, it did improve in the game, I thought, against the Packers. You're moving in the right direction there. But I think the running game can still be better, and it should be expected to be better with the guys that you have up front there right now. So I think more than anything with offense, it's and look, I mean, like, make no mistake, too. Ben hasn't been sharp with his deep throws most of the season. They have missed that big play aspect. They obviously got it back in this game against the Packers on Sunday night. But, you know, when you're not having that big play element, which Ben has always kind of thrived on those deep passes, if you're not having a more consistent down to down, you know, consistency, and then you know, running game overall, I think there's probably not many people listening that's going to argue that doesn't think that that all season this running game just hasn't been there. And I think when you add all those things up, that's the issue with the offense here. Defensively, look, they had a problem against chunk runs earlier in the season, and they solved that. That played, that along with obviously the offense, played a role in those losses to the Jaguars and the Bears. They have seemingly fixed their run defense. Now, from the, I don't know, what game was it, David? The Detroit game on, the big explosive passing plays, and especially the ones that are going, that are home running. That's been the biggest issue. But even so, during that stretch of games, you know, they gave, you know, how many points have they been allowing? You know, so defensively, I think you could have won all of these games this season the way the defense has played in each and every one of them. So, you know, obviously I think they're going to fix it. I mean, I knock on wood, how many more 50-yard touchdowns are they going to give up on the season? And what's the likelihood of that?
You know, I mean, I would make the over-under at a half. I mean, literally, with five games to go, you would think, you know, it ain't going to happen more than one or two more times. But good gracious, they've certainly given up their share of big plays here. And all of them going for touchdowns in the last couple of weeks.
Right, and it keeps going back to what I said. Look, I understand getting mad at Artie at blowing a, you know, a coverage, which has been, it's not like that was his first time the other night against the Packers. I get that. I get Cody Sensabaugh just getting beat by, you know, by a better player or a better scheme. I can't get the vision out of my head on a couple of three of these, maybe four, that they could have had the guy down on the ground even before he went into the end zone. That's what has bothered me the most, I think, about all the look at the game against the Lions. Okay. You're going to run into quarterbacks that are going to hole shot the hell out of you, right? I mean, that Matthew Stafford, 20, 25 yards at a time. And then, of course, the blown coverage on, what was it, the one close to the opening of the game. Just get the guy on the ground and live to fight another down. And you know, evident of that in the game against the Lions. They still only gave up 15 points. Now, if you just look at that score, 20 to 15, you're thinking, well, the defense did their part and the offense, you know, probably should have done a little bit more in that game. Well, the truth of the matter is the defense gave up a ton of yardage in that play, in that game. They just were able to leave some great blades of grass to defend, and they defended it and held them to 15 points. But I think if you look top to bottom, you know, you gave up 23 points to the Bears. The last one of those was the walk off touchdown there against the Jaguars. 30 points you allow them to have, and how many of those came off of the offense? You know, two pick sixes in that game, and then this game this past week against the Packers. I think overall, I guess what I'm getting at is sew up these big plays on defense and you should be fine. And as far as offense goes, the three things that I listed, a little bit more play-by-play consistency, and then obviously the running game improving a little bit.
Okay, I think that's a very reasonable assessment. Look, you know, one of the things we haven't spent a lot of time talking about this year, it's pretty interesting because it was such a focal point of a lot of our conversations over the years, is turnover margin. And you know, today's game in the NFL, there's less, you know, I think teams, ball control offenses, West Coast offenses, just, you know, the significance teams place on not turning the ball over is different than it was 30 years ago, 20 years ago. You know, I think teams understand that. The five turnovers against the Jags, obviously, it was a determining factor. But we haven't talked a lot about turnover margin. The Steelers are a little bit positive in the turnover margin. The defense has been able to do it. They've been able to create sacks. I think they broke the 40-sack barrier. You know, they're on pace here to kind of, you know, be up around some of their best season numbers that they've had. They've done a good job of protecting the quarterback. There are a lot of positives around this team in terms of what they're capable of doing. And it goes back to what we thought at the beginning of the season. There's a reason the Steelers were one of the, you know, whatever group you want to put them in, the five or six favorites to win the Super Bowl. And there's a reason they're one of the, you know, three or four favorites right now to win the Super Bowl. It's the AFC, I think, much to my surprise, from where we were even a couple weeks into the season, I thought the AFC had great depth and the NFC was going to be a top and bottom conference. And it's turned out that that's not the case at all. The AFC is clearly a top and bottom conference, with the Steelers and the Patriots clearly at the top. I don't even know, Dave, I don't know who you'd put third right now. I might put the Chargers third right now as the team, certainly today, playing the best football. I don't think anybody's going to put the Chiefs there. And if you're not putting if it's not one of those two teams, you know, who are you picking? Are you picking the Titans? Are you picking the Jags? You know, you're not picking anybody out of the AFC East, I don't think. And you're not picking the Bengals and the Ravens, I don't think. So, you know, the question is, in the AFC, where do you go? Whereas in the NFC, you look at it, and you just kind of can go down the list. I mean, the Redskins are way down the list, and they're a pretty good football team, in my opinion. You've got the Eagles at the top, and then you've got a bunch of teams in there, whether it's Carolina playing good football, the Falcons maybe turning things around, the Saints, the Rams, you know, the Seahawks are always capable, the Vikings, you know, that the list of things. So the Steelers have been, you know, they've been everything. You know, again, if somebody just time transported you from week one of the Browns to kind of here you are going into week 12, you'd say 9-2. You'd look at it overall, you'd say kind of everything here is almost exactly what you would have hoped for. It's just how they've done it. I think your point of consistency is the key, and it hasn't been the level of consistency that you'd hope for. And you know, it starts with Ben, who's been, you know, at his best the last six quarters, but it kind of just goes through the whole team. A missed play here, a missed play there, you know, a week here where you don't do things, some of the things you'd like to do. And so they haven't necessarily passed fans' eye test on a week to week basis, but they're 9-2.
Well, you know, and I think you hit on one thing on the defense there that I didn't hit on, and really you know, good plays into the offense as well. Mike Tomlin obviously mentioned this a week or two ago, and that is the turnover differential. They are, you know what they are right now, right? You know what their net differential is?
Well, I was thinking about it before this past game, and I obviously they went 0-3, so is it 1? Or is it 0? 1 or 0?
It would be 0. So how many teams – you know what? That would be an interesting quick research, right? How many times has a team gone on to win a Super Bowl with a net differential of blank or lower?
Yeah, and you know what would be interesting about that is you've got to obviously delineate – the regular season number and then the postseason number, because essentially you're starting over in the postseason number. You can be plus 12 in the season, but if you go +3 and you're -3 in your first playoff game, you're probably saying goodbye. I would imagine there's not a team in the history of the NFL that's been able to go negative in both the regular season and in the playoffs and win the Super Bowl. I would you know, bet a chunk of change on that.
Well, I mean,
I'd bet your Bitcoin investment on that.
Well, I mean, regular season is more of a reflection, though. I mean, a team can get hot. I mean, how many teams have we seen get hot on a run to the Super Bowl and have, I mean, I'm sure it's happened, you know, +6 or whatever with a turnover. But I think just as a raw initial part of the research, and it shouldn't be hard to do, is go back through the Super Bowl champions to find out. I mean, what should the X number be there? 2 or less? 5? You know, I don't know, but that's why I'm throwing darts here and asking you, you know, what would be your guess?
The first thing I'd want to see is how many teams -4 turnovers, which would be, you know, kind of losing one out of every four games, a -1 out of every four games. How many teams with a -4 turnover ratio to 0, you know, made the playoffs? I would think if you're more than -4, it's really, really hard to make the playoffs. But look, here the Steelers at 0 and 9-2. I mean, they could, if they were -1 in their next 5 games and went 4-1 or whatever, you know, they'd have a negative turnover differential and they'd coast to the play, you know, coast into the playoffs. So I don't know. I do think it's a defining stat, but I'm sure there are probably some outliers there.
Boy, we know how to open up these rabbit holes, don't we?
Yeah.
All right. And because I have it open, because I've already got some of this pulled up while you were jabbering there, last year, who won the Super Bowl? New England, right? They were regular season +12. Who did they play? Atlanta. They were +11 during the regular season. Who won the Super Bowl the year before that?
Seattle. I don't know. Was that Seattle? They beat New England. Is that the
Oh, you're starting to now we're open up. No, it was Denver beat Carolina, right?
Yeah, I don't, you know, this is, ask me the 70s, I'll get it right. Yeah, Denver beat Cam, and then the year before that was the non-handoff at the goal line. So the year before that was New England over Seattle.
Right? All right, well, here's something for you. In the 2015 season, Denver was -4 during the regular.
There you go, because Peyton was a disaster, right? Like 9 touchdowns, 17 interceptions. He was -8 or something himself versus TD's interception. So there's your answer.
All right, and then Carolina led the league that season. +20, David, in the turnover differential. 2000, we obviously aren't going to go through all these. New England and Seattle was the Super Bowl before that. New England was +12 that year. Seattle was +10. The Super Bowl before that was Seahawks over Broncos. Seattle led the league that year, +20. Denver that year was net zero. How about that?
You know what's interesting about those two Denver teams? We talk about how dominant their defense was. You would think that they were, you know, creating a ton of turnovers, but maybe it's the fact that they were so often three and out, or, you know, able to stuff teams. You know, teams couldn't throw or run against them. Maybe they're just, you know, fewer plays, fewer opportunities for turnovers. But it is interesting because I know the one year Peyton was turning over a ton, but the other year, when you go further back, that was his 50-plus touchdown year. I don't have the sense that Peyton was turning it over a ton. So it's interesting that that number was zero.
And then we'll close it out with this. Baltimore and San Francisco was the year before that. I think, what was that, 2012, was it? Baltimore +9 that year, and San Francisco was +9. The last time the Steelers went to the Super Bowl was, what, the 2010 season? What was the Steelers plus minus or net differential turnover that year? 17, second best in the league behind the Patriots, who had a +28 net differential. They had a they had 11 more differential than number two Steelers that year. Green Bay had a +10 that year, and then obviously the Steelers last time they won the Super Bowl was in 2008, David, during the regular season. They had a net differential of 4 that season. So tied for.
So let me ask you: these are all regular season numbers?
These are all regular season numbers.
Yeah, yeah. So you know, that gives you a good sense of it. And the Steelers, you know, it sounds like if you were just going to average all those numbers, it comes out to about 10. I mean, you know, a bunch of the numbers were around 10 to 12, and you get some outliers at 20, and you've got some. You know, you got some down around zero. The Bronco numbers are the two outliers. So interesting to see. Can you just pull up this year's numbers and tell us who's on the top and where the kind of likely playoff teams are?
Yes, I can. We are in 2017. Baltimore leads the league with a 11 net differential. Jacksonville, as you'd probably imagine, second with 10. Philadelphia, you have three teams tied for third: Philadelphia, New England, and the Chargers, all with 9, +9. They are followed then by, then it gets into kind of the meh area. Buffalo.
So every one of those teams you mentioned, right, you know, the Chargers are the borderline team, but they're, you know, all playoff teams, right, up top there.
Well, you know, Baltimore is what?
Baltimore, right. Okay.
Baltimore is still, aren't they the number, they are the number
six or seven,
six seed right now, are they not? Hold on a minute here. Let me look at my seating. Yeah, Baltimore's still in the picture. I mean, if the season ended today, Baltimore's in.
So, you know, it continues to be a, you know, a very significantly predictive stat as to, you know, playoff probability.
Well, and let's take it a step further, in a stat that, you know, we get further away from, I think, or have gotten further away from this season, although we have recently talked about it in shows, is the talk stat, right? I mean, 80% of the team, or if you finish a game with a talk number of +2 or greater, 80% of the time you're going to win that game. Okay, now obviously we had an anomaly this past week with the Steelers going -3 in the talks. So chalk that one up with hurrying up and putting your opponent on a plane and getting them out of town there. But, you know, explosive plays and turnovers, man. Especially, look, when you want something to look forward to when you're talking about this upcoming game against New England. You damn sure better win that turnover battle with Tom Brady, and you better it better be a +2 or better, probably, in that aspect. You better run the ball, you better win time of possession, and you better out explosive play him. End of story there. So you hate to boil a game down to just, you know, a couple simple stats, but you know it is what it is.
Yeah, I've said for years, if you're going to give me, you know, one stat at the end of the game, give me the turnover stat, and I'll get it right most of the time. And obviously, we wouldn't have gotten it right on Sunday night. So, okay, anything else from Mike talking this week, or, you know, bigger picture stuff that, you know, the press conferences, obviously, I'm a little biased. I'm not there and don't get into some of these things that I'd like to get into with Mike. But this one was a short one, and I don't know. Was there anything else that jumped out at you?
No, in fact, I mean, it's too bad you're not there, because I don't think the questions are as good overall as a whole this year, to be quite honest with you. I think there's a lot of stupid ones to be upfront and personal about it. But, you know, he talked about the big plays. You know, we covered that. He talked about the injuries. Geez, what else? He really didn't hit on too many other huge talking points, I don't think. Did he? I mean, nobody asked him about the comments about, you know, that he made about the Patriots. And, you know,
he did get asked that. He got asked that in the post game, right?
Right. Right. I mean, he got asked about that during the post game, but as far as Tuesday goes, no. Geez, I'm sure I'm missing something here as far as what he said. But, okay, on to what else did we need to get to before we got to our
well, yeah, we're going to talk. Let's talk a little bit about this Eli Manning situation.
Right.
Because, you know, God forbid someday down the road, the Steelers have a bad season and Ben's still around a quarterback, if they have to make some decisions. Dave, I'll just say, look, I've been out there on Eli for a long time. Eli's, I'm sure, a great guy. The Manning family's been discussed enough that everybody, you know, I think 90% of the world loves the Manning family and 10% of the world probably hate the Manning family. Eli's been a good quarterback who's won two Super Bowls. I don't think Eli right now, if you asked me who you'd rather have for the next, you know, 2 years, Eli Manning or Joe Flacco, I'd kind of, you know, it's a alternative of two bad choices for me. Eli Manning's not a good quarterback anymore. He's not terrible. It's not a disaster, but the guy's never had a passing rating over 95 in his career. In his last 8 years, I don't think his QBR has been above 65. I relentlessly am getting barraged by Giants fans about how he's lost so much talent this year. You know, all the receivers and the offensive line, they started 0-5. All those guys were healthy. You know, they went into the season coming off a playoff year last year with this group that they added to, and they were 0-5. So I'm not used, you know, that doesn't fly for me. I just, the New York media and some of the national media, some of the Pittsburgh media are just appalled by how the Giants have handled this. And, I, you know, to me, this is a business, man. You're 2-9. I don't care if it's Geno Smith or Davis Webb or whomever. You know, it's not a tenured position. You don't get to play quarterback forever. You're 2-9. You get the credit when they win. Maybe you're. I don't think anybody's sitting here going the Giants are 2-9 because of Eli Manning. But I mean, the fact that people feel like Eli is, you know, the back of the tabloids, you know, the callous benching of Eli Manning and his former teammates, some of Justin Tucks of the world out there saying this is the most absurd, you know, most terrible thing I've ever seen in my history involvement of the game. To me, this is just everybody's lost the plot here.
Let me tell you where I am on this. First of all, let me tell you where I am on Eli Manning. I think Eli Manning can still win a Super Bowl. I still think he has what it takes to win a Super Bowl. Now, obviously, he'd have to have the right talent around him, specifically on offense, and of course have a decent defense to be able to do that. I think he still has the ability to win a Super Bowl. Now,
I don't.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know. Could he win a game? Can he win it? Look, any of 20 guys, Blake Bortles can win a Super Bowl. Defense play, look, we've seen it. We've seen kind of, you go back to what's his name for the Ravens in 2001. The television, Trent Dilfer won a Super Bowl. I mean, got Rich Gannon's won a Super Bowl. We see Flacco's won a Super Bowl. I mean, you have a run and the defense plays well. And, a lot of guys can win a Super Bowl.
Yeah, but I mean, I put it a little bit higher than the names that you just mentioned. I think he still has it. I think a lot of it is talent related, being talent poor right now on offense with them. Look, their offensive line has been a mess for a couple years. When's the last time we talked about one of their running backs being, talked about in the top even 10 running backs in the league type of thing? I think by watching his games, he has had some bonehead decisions throughout the years. I mean, he went on a string of some interceptions there a couple years ago. You're thinking, my God, but playing.
How about this one? Since December 1, 2008 to December 1 this year, so the last 10 years, he's 69-74 as a starter.
Sure, they've had some bad teams, David. I mean, there's no two ways around that, but plain and simple, my thought is he can still win a Super Bowl. Now, obviously, that's not
okay. Fair enough.
It's not going to happen in New York now. I think he's got 1 or 2 years left to maybe do it. Who knows? Maybe he's the guy that goes to Denver next year and not what's his name, Kirk Cousins. Okay. All right. Let's move past that. Let's move now to way the Giants handle this. I think. And what caught me off guard was really the original tweet that the Giants sent out, David. Geno Smith to start at quarterback on Sunday. Okay? I just think that's all framed kind of wrong. If the Giants would have framed it, and really what the Giants should be doing, if you ask me, I have no issue with Eli being sat down. However, if they were to come out and say, look, Eli, we need to get a long look at Davis Webb here. He's going to be our starter for the remainder of the season, and we want Geno Smith to back him up because we want to kind of see what Geno, how he continues to function as a backup, and should we need to put him into a game. And then Eli is going to be inactive the rest of the season. If they would have framed it like that, right out of the chute and said, Davis Webb is our starter, I would have been able to swallow all this a little bit better. But don't tell me that you're sitting Eli down because you want to look at Geno Smith. I mean, for God's sakes, we all know who Geno Smith is.
Let me respond to that one. Geno Smith's 27. He has started one game since he was 24. He was going to be the Jets starter. He had gotten that locker room situation where a guy busted his jaw, so he doesn't start. So he's basically backed up since. So the guy, his first 2 years in the league, he came in, he went 8-8 as a rookie with the Jets. Then I think he was something ridiculously bad, like 3-10 as a starter. And he started one game since then. So I don't know. It's not like the NFL has done a great job of, evaluating quarterback talent. We've seen tons of guys. Case Keenum is the perfect example of a guy who, guys are like, he's terrible. Or Jared Goff, he's awful last year. People want to call him a bust, and now he's got good coaching, and he's going to make the Pro Bowl this year. So, my expectations aren't Geno Smith becomes Ben Roethlisberger, but the guy started one game in 3 years, and he started one game since he was 24 years old. He's obviously physically a gifted guy. I'm not necessarily I think Davis Webb, and they've said Davis Webb is going to get the bulk of the playing time and probably, at least 3 of the 5 starts. So they're going to look at both. I think, everybody talks about how they treat Eli Manning. Well, the other thing is if Geno Smith's your backup and he's done the work for the last, for the entire season and been the good soldier as the backup, doesn't he deserve at least to get a start and a little bit of playing time for the work that he does too? I mean, people talk about it, he's your number 2 quarterback. Now, if he's not, if you think Davis Webb is clearly the better guy and because I do buy that, that Davis Webb's the more important guy to look at. And if they didn't start him in any of these games, I think that'd be ridiculous. But I don't have a problem with them getting Geno some time, too, to you know, just to give him a look. I mean, it's like saying we 100% know what Landry Jones is right now. I don't know. We have a pretty good idea. But, you know, Landry played okay in that Patriots game last year, whichever game he played. The Patriots game or which game did he play? The Patriots game?
The Patriots one, yeah.
Yeah, you know, he played okay. He threw a bad interception early, but he played okay. And I would if somebody put a gun to my head, Landry Jones is probably better than five or ten of the starting quarterbacks in the NFL right now. But how do I know? How do you know? How does anybody know?
All right, we've
seen the guy.
All right, now take your analyst hat off. Take your analyst hat off. Go to your closet, pull out that New York Giants hat that you have in there somewhere. I know you got one. Put that on. Get your pennant out. Okay, you spent time in New York. I know you got these things. You just not.
That's why I hate them. You know, if you spend time there, that's why you hate them more than any of them.
Or New Jersey or whatever. You know, pull that out. Put that on, David. Okay, you're a Giants fan right now. Tell me, which guy do you have more hope could be your quarterback of the future, Geno Smith or Davis Webb?
Oh yeah, no. If I'm a run of the mill fan, you're always taking the younger guy you haven't seen. The rule is take the guy you haven't seen because he hasn't disappointed you yet. And obviously, Geno Smith has disappointed fans, you know, in the New York area with the Jets, so they've seen it. You know, but at least you know hey Bob, what's behind door number three? You know, it's the GOAT. Well, you know, all you got here is a toaster oven with Geno Smith, but you might have a new car with Davis Webb, but you might have a goat too, but you don't know. So the you don't know part is worth a lot for fans.
Well, this all goes back, and I asked you that because this all goes back to how I think they could have framed this better. Now, was this still going to not get crucified by the New York media and all like that? And was a section of the fan base still going to have issue with this? I just think it would have been able to have been swallowed better. You know, a spoonful of sugar, you know, makes the medicine go down. And if they would have framed it and said, Davis Webb is going to start, you know, these remaining five games, and that's why we're doing this, I think it would have been swallowed better. And boy, imagine that. We just made a Mary Poppins reference and a Let's Make a Deal reference. And both those will go over.
I should have said Monty. I said Bob, but you got it right. It is Let's Make a Deal, Monty Hall. And by the way, if you've never looked up the Monty Hall problem, Google it. It's one of the great, fascinating math problems about game theory and choice. And you might not even agree with what it's in there, but Google the Monty Hall problem.
And now we just lost 50% of our
the other three listeners.
Yeah, the other six listeners. Just
Giants deep.
Yeah, the Giants
deep. Look, I'm the first to admit that I do not. I have unrose colored glasses when it comes to Eli Manning. I have the utmost respect for Eli as a guy. I just think he's the guy. He won the Super Bowl rings, and he'll carry that for the rest of his life, and good for him. Do I think he's a Hall of Fame quarterback? Probably not. I think he'll probably get in because he's a Manning and he's won two Super Bowls. But if you look at his, he's had a long tenured, above average, but never been a great NFL quarterback. And you know, those kind of guys to me aren't Hall of Fame guys. He won he played in the Super Bowls and he made some plays in the Super Bowls, but they won the Super Bowl in the back of their defense both times. But they beat the Patriots twice and forever, you know, in Steeler fans, I'm sure in many Steeler fans, when they catalog history, Eli will get an exalted spot, and maybe rightly so, because he twice beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl, because otherwise they'd have two more Super Bowl titles. So, you know, he's a guy who draws he draws a lot of emotion, you know, both ways. But yeah. Hey, man, the New York media is slobbering today.
Yeah,
slobbering.
Yeah, they definitely have some readership and some listenership right now here. Look, he beat the Patriots twice, and yeah, I know David Tyree's helmet catch, blah blah blah. You got to put the ball You got to put the ball there where he can make a helmet catch. He made some other excellent throws in those games. So I think you're a little bit hard on Eli overall. And yes, I do think he can still win a Super Bowl in the next 2 years with the right organization. All right, plain and simple, before we end the Giants Depot portion of the podcast, will Eli be a Giant next year?
I doubt it. Here's the one thing is if you get a chance to draft Rosen or Darnold, or if they think the kid from Wyoming is going to be that guy, you know, the Giants look like they're going to pick in the top six. You know, they could pick as high as two, maybe. Who knows? They look like they're going to pick in the top six teams. And a couple of those teams probably won't be looking for quarterbacks, and a couple of teams probably looking to trade in there for quarterbacks. So, you know, if you get a guy like that, maybe you keep Eli around, try to keep him around for 1 year to mentor that, because that's probably worth something. So I actually see it maybe as more likely if you get something like that. But I'd say 60-40 no, but, you know, 60-40, no, I guess. I don't know. He's no guaranteed money left on his deal. And, you know, if he wants to go, I'm sure they would give him the courtesy of releasing him.
Well, and he's due a roster bonus in March of $5 million. And if he's got some sort of no trade or selective trade clause. He's going to force their hand is what's going to happen, I think. And he should.
Well, I think it'll be a gentlemanly conversation, and they'll let him out. I don't think it'll be acrimonious. Put it that way.
Right, and look, I mean, there's going to be some dead money associated with him too, I believe. But overall, they will absolutely save some cap room by turning him loose. So I think he ends up being let go, you know, either traded or let go in March before they have to pay him that fine. Because let's face it, even if Eli Manning stays, are the Giants, knowing what you know right now, are the Giants going to win the Super Bowl in 2018?
Yeah, Giants are going to be the fourth best team in the Eastern Division of 2018.
Right, so the answer is obviously no, barring minor miracle, I think. So why not go ahead and cut bait and start rebuilding that thing the way you think you need to rebuild it. Boy, God forbid, David, when we come to the day where we're talking about a two, we're having to have podcasts with a 2-9 Steelers team. I don't want to live long enough to be on Twitter or have such a podcast there. But you know, it's a reality of it. Look, I mean, I don't think Ben's career is going to be over. I don't think he's going to retire after this season. I don't think you think he's going to. But the fact of the matter is, Ben's contract runs out after the 2020 season. It's coming. We can peer down there and see the end. Okay, I'd rather not think about that end, what happens after that end until it actually does happen, much like my view on the game against the Patriots a few weeks from now. But up next is Cincinnati. On to Cincinnati.
Yep, we got our man, Paul Daner Jr., coming up next. Okay, welcome back. It is Wednesday afternoon, and it means we're getting together with a beat writer covering the opposing team. Of course, the Steelers will be in Cincinnati on Monday Night Football, taking on the Bengals, a team which obviously the Steelers have done well against the Bengals over the years here and certainly done fantastically well, all things considered, on the road in Cincinnati. We're pleased to be joined by our buddy Paul Daner Jr., who covers the Bengals for the Cincinnati Inquirer, Cincinnati.com. You can follow him on Twitter at his name, at Paul, DehnerJr. Jr. He's a great Twitter follower, so get on that. Paul, always good to be with you. Thanks for making the time for us.
Yeah, no problem. It's funny you mentioned having success with Paul Brown's team. I can't help but jump right in and just say, you know what's amazing? The Bengals and the Steelers have both had levels of success during the Marvin Lewis era. I mean, the Bengals have been to the playoffs 7-8 times. You know, the Steelers obviously perennially. And the Steelers being 14-2 at Paul Brown Stadium has to be within the Marvin Lewis era. That has to be one of the most amazing stats when you consider how good both teams have kind of been for the most part. It's got to be one of the most amazing stats that we come across, right? It's remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, there are two stats that are related to the Steelers in Ohio. That's number one. And how about this one? In First Energy Stadium, or whatever they're calling Cleveland now, Ben Roethlisberger has more career wins as a starter than any quarterback in the history of the stadium.
Yeah. but the Browns are historically awful.
But they do get to play 8 games there a year. You know?
They do. That's correct. You're right.
So, okay. So tell us what's different than the first time around. I mean, this game scares me a lot as a Steeler fan. It feels like the Bengals offensively are starting to get things, you know, organized a little bit. And I'm worried about this game on Monday night. And some of it is, you know, just the fact that you threw that stat out there. Like, the longer it goes, the closer they are that is to, you know, not continuing. Where are the Bengals right now?
Well, you know, they're still flawed in a big way. They still have lots of issues. There's, you know, they're 5-6, but it's sort of a smoke and mirrors. 5-6. They're 4-0 against teams that have 3 wins or less this year, and they're 1-6 against teams that have more than 3 wins. So, you know, they've made hay on the Browns twice. They beat Denver in Denver, but, you know, we've seen what that Denver team is. You know, with Brock Osweiler was throwing picks to him and all that stuff. So yeah, I think we're going to learn how much the Bengals have actually maybe improved. I do think there's improvement. I think really where you start is, you know, we talked about this back the first time. Their offensive line has been so bad. But I will say this. In the last 4 weeks, since they went on a 3-game road trip to Jacksonville, to Tennessee, into Denver, and then obviously last week against the Browns, their offensive line in pass protection has been far, far improved. They went from, I had Pro Football Focus run the numbers. They went from those first eight games of the season, or 7 games of the season, they were ranked 25th in pass blocking efficiency. The last 4, they've been a top 10 group. And that is not against, you know, some weak pass rushing teams. That was against Saxonville. That was against Von Miller and company. And that was against a Tennessee team that just, I don't know how many times they just sacked Jacoby Brissett last week, but they have pass rushers too. Miles Garrett and company, even with Cleveland, for all that they are, they have some pass rushers. The offensive line has gotten better. They've gotten some stability. Jake Fisher got hurt, but Andre Smith plugged in at right tackle. They stopped doing this ridiculous 3-tackle rotation thing, and they got Trey Hopkins back at guard instead of having a rotation going on there due to injury. They've gotten some stability, and I think it's shown, and that has helped the offense be a little more effective. I mean, they're still very flawed, but it has helped them be a little bit more effective offensively.
You know, forever the questions will be about Andy Dalton and where he is. We know what kind of the skilled guys are doing, and I'm sure we'll get into Joe Mixon and him breaking out, if that's the right term, last week. But Andy Dalton, what kind of season is he having? And your best guess today as to whether he's the starting quarterback next year?
Well, he's actually, quietly has played really well since the offensive coordinator change. He actually currently has the longest active streak in the NFL without a pick. He's gone 5 games without a pick. He's thrown 140 straight passes without one.
I saw his numbers the last 5 games are identical to Carson Wentz's. I mean, he's got a 100-plus QB rating.
He's really played. I mean, he's really not been – I don't think he's been a huge part of the issue. He's kind of take what defenses have given him. He's done a good job. The one thing I will say that they've started to show some explosiveness in is hitting balls over the top. I know that's something you guys are talking a lot about in Pittsburgh this week, which has become a concerning trend with your guys' secondary. And that's these long passes and these big explosive plays in the passing game. You know, they had a 70-yarder to A.J. Green in Tennessee that darn near won them the game. They had a 37-yarder over the top to Brandon LaFell in Tennessee as well. They had a couple touchdowns over the top in Denver. They've found a little bit because going back to the offensive line, finally getting some protection, when they do get guys open down the field now, they're more at a higher rate hitting those. You know, they had a big one that ended up being a critical penalty but a big one to Josh Malone against Cleveland. They're getting more of those down the field, and they're being more effective with those. And that's made a difference for Dalton. You know, and that's made a difference for the entire offense because, you know, they're not at a point right now where I think they can consistently go up and down the field. They're not good enough for that yet, but when they can find the explosiveness, they can get enough points to win them some games if their defense can hold it down.
Paul, before I talk a little bit about a couple of young offensive players, I wanted your objective view of Vontaze Burfict right now. I mean, obviously, week in, week out, he is in the crosshairs, and it kind of reminds me of years ago with James Harrison. You know, he had a bunch of those questionable hits and fines right there, seemingly right in a row, and then every hit that James Harrison seemed to make after that for the next year and a half was really underneath the microscope. Is Vontaze Burfict just a victim of being in the spotlight now? Or, I mean, quite honestly, you go back and look at this hit, what was it, last week or the week before on the guy going over in the middle there. Is he deserving a lot of this right now, or is this just his name and his past history is getting a lot of this? Where do you honestly stand on Vontaze Burfict right now?
Well, I mean, he made this bet. Let's start there, okay? Yes, I will say yes. I think that there's clearly been some reputation calls that have happened. You know, the ejection in Tennessee where he made contact with the official. The NFL didn't even fine him for that. So, I mean, if we know the history between the league and Vontaze Burfict, for them to not even fine him in a game that he got ejected and made contact with an official kind of shows you, I think, what the league thought of that call. So, yeah, you have to say that. And then the Corey Coleman hit this week, I think most would agree, and Marvin Lewis said to us on Monday, it's a legal play. It's a hit when the guy's in the pocket crossing in within 5 yards. Those are reputation calls. They're happening. A lot of them are happening early in games. A lot of them are thrown to say, Vontaze, we're not going to have this today from you. And look, the bottom line is he drew this target on himself through a career of actually doing a lot of stuff and actually building that reputation is well earned. So he's dealing with that now. That's part of him. That's part of what he is going to have to play with is what this kind of obstacle that he built up for himself a little bit. Is it right? No, but that's what happens. You know, that's what happens when you have enough incidents with the league. You do get yourself targeted, and that's where he's at right now. The thing that he can't do, and that kind of happened against Cleveland, and we've seen happen before, is either actually get himself taken out of a game or emotionally take himself out of a game when these types of things start to happen. You know, he kind of disappeared against Cleveland once he got that early call. It kind of took him out of it emotionally, and he actually got himself taken out of the game in Tennessee by making contact with the official. As small as it was, it still was brushing an official's hand off of you. And when you're Vontaze Burfict, when you wear number 55, that's the type of stuff that's going to get you kicked out of a game. When, you know, whether you think it's fair or unfair, the rules are different for you. They just are. And I think that's where they're at right now. But when he doesn't get taken out of a game, when he is emotionally into it and playing right now, we saw it against Denver. He had a game against Denver which reminded of the playoff game against Pittsburgh when he was making every play. He's all over the place, causing fumbles, getting passes defense, sacks. When he's doing that, this defense is just different. It's just different, but he's got to keep himself in it, both emotionally, physically, all of that. And he's right now in a spot where health-wise, instincts-wise, spot in the defense wise, he can absolutely take over a game.
Two young guys, and David already mentioned one of them, Joe Mixon. Now, Joe Mixon obviously had a better game, and really the offense as a whole, I thought, played better against Cleveland there. And then you have another young rookie wide receiver in John Ross, who I think was a healthy scratch, which maybe, you know, probably not overly surprising, but I think it caught maybe a few people off guard there. Personally, looking at the tape and then marrying it up to the stats and all like that, I think, and considering the issues with the offensive line, I think Joe Mixon's been somewhat of a disappointment overall this year. Maybe you disagree, but talk about where both those guys are right now at this stage of their rookie season, and if you thought they would be further ahead than where they are right now.
All right, yeah, I'll start with Joe Mixon. I mean, this was the breakout game for him. It's hard to really call him a disappointment when he's having to make moves 4 and 5 yards in the backfield so often. I don't know. This has kind of been an amazing stat. I'd been tracking it. It got a little bit of a slack let off of it this past week because they had a good game. But they were on pace to actually – be the fourth worst team in NFL history for yards per carry. I mean, ever. And that's where their running game was at. And that was mostly because of negative plays and guys just breaking through in the backfield. I do think that Mixon has taken some steps in accepting the importance of a 3 to 5 yard gain and not getting crazy and trying to turn those into home runs. That makes a big difference. And I think we've seen more of that the last couple weeks has helped him be more effective in general as a runner. And when he gets into space, he's dangerous. I wouldn't call him a disappointment at all. I think he's got a pretty special skill set, and that has shown. I think that he hasn't had much help around him. John Ross, he's not going to make an impact this year. Marvin Lewis has pretty much made sure of that. They like what the other guys are doing. They feel like he's too far behind in practice from the injuries that have kept him out. And the few times they have given him an opportunity, it hasn't gone well. And Marvin Lewis even called him out in a press conference a couple weeks ago for a bad route that he ran. I mean, the guy's only played 17 snaps this year. Two of them have gone pretty bad. it's hard to say that he's suddenly going to see the field. That they've just kind of decided that this is going to be a detention year, I guess, for him. It's definitely a point of controversy in this city, that's for sure. I think I get more questions about John Ross than probably anything else on this team.
Real quick, do you think Joe Mixon will be a top five back in the NFL in the next 2 or 3 years?
If he ever gets a line in front of him. I mean, yes. I think he has that type of skill. I mean, he's balance, speed, power, instincts, all that type of stuff. He's gifted, but he can't be in a spot where he's constantly asked to make guys miss as soon as he touches the ball 4 yards in the backfield. If he gets any kind of line in front of him, I think he's better than any back the Bengals have had in this recent run, better than Giovanni Bernard, better than Jeremy Hill, better than Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, better than Cedric Benson. I think as from a pure running standpoint, he's better than all those guys.
Better side of the ball right now, offense or defense?
Defense is still a better side of the ball, but they got their own questions. They have the last three games. They have these long stretches of playing well, and they're still, have a lot of good players there. But the last three games, they have either let teams back into a game or literally given up the game in the final seconds. In Tennessee, they had the win and they gave up. They gave up a touchdown with seconds left, a long drive all the way down. In Denver, they go up 2 scores. They instantly allow a long drive and a touchdown to pull within the score. Against Cleveland, up 2 scores, they allow a long drive to Deshaun Kizer, of all people, to pull within a score. That's not something that you can do against the Steelers and Ben Roethlisberger and come out alive. They're too good and too talented where they're going to take advantage of you letting them back into a game. And that's kind of the biggest issue I think that the defense is dealing with right now. They're at their sharpest. They need to come out and play really well. And we haven't seen them play great defense. We've seen them play good to pretty good defense most of this year, but they haven't become that great team that they really need to be when the offense has struggled.
Look, we know the personnel. We've talked a lot about it. We've talked to you about what these guys are capable of doing, and there are a lot of guys on this defense I like. It seems like the secondary has been playing pretty well. I know Mike Tomlin mentioned William Jackson, obviously the guy picked in front of Artie Burns, so they'll be, linked as long as we're talking about games with both those guys. Tell me about him and the secondary play.
William Jackson is their best corner right now, in my opinion. And he hasn't, they've worked him in first into a rotation. That rotation has grown. He's basically rotating with Adam Jones at this point. And last week, I think William played about 75% and Adam was around 37. You know, Drake Kirkpatrick has stayed as the starting corner. Darquez Dennard has played really well this year. He's really finally kind of found a home in the slot, and he's been asked to move outside and play really well. William Jackson, the third, is a star. I think he could be the story. If the Bengals win, I think he will be the story of Monday night. I mean, if he spends most of the night tracking Antonio Brown, he's had success at that. He can do that type of thing. I think he could be something that they look at as a building block if things go well on Monday. I think, you know, the future is pretty bright in that position, actually.
If you're Todd Haley and you're thinking about how to attack the Bengals, the Steelers have been heavy pass the past couple of weeks, really kind of slanted things, kind of 2/3, 1/3 to the pass game. Le'Veon Bell finally was a factor in the passing game this past game against Green Bay. He has been much less of one this year than he's been in past years, really, in terms of impact, maybe not in terms of targets. How do you attack the Bengals?
Run the ball. I mean, teams have pretty consistently had success in that way. I mean, even the Browns ran out and went for 5.5 per rush on Sunday. And, you know, I think it's the one area where the Bengals are most susceptible. They obviously had problems. You know, maybe the yards per carry came out not looking as great after that first Pittsburgh game. But everyone knows how effective Le'Veon Bell really was when it mattered. If I'm Pittsburgh, I think it's pretty obvious. I think you go out and you say, we're going to run it until you can prove you can stop it and see if they can.
One final question before I turn it over to David, and we'll get a prediction from you here in a minute. What does Carl Lawson not do well?
I mean, he's probably not there as a run stuffer yet. I mean, you know, he's still basically a pass rush specialist, but in this league, that's a whole lot of the time that you're out there. So for the snaps that he's put out there in situations where he's needed, he's a nickel pass rush. And when he's out there, he does everything. He has been just an absolute beast off that edge. I mean, his pass rush numbers are crazy as far as percentage of pressures. He has mastered the old Reggie White hump move where he goes speed to the outside, stops it, and throws the guy with his left hand. It's been pretty impressive to watch all year. He's done it against pretty much every tackle he's gone against. I think he should be in the conversation for Defensive Rookie of the Year, honestly. You don't hear his name as much as you should. He does most everything well when he's out there.
Boy, he uses that long arm technique as well, too. And you go back to that first meeting against the Steelers, he was able to long arm Alejandro Villanueva, I think, once or twice in that game. I say that because we studied him a lot. A lot of us thought that he might be a Steelers selection, so I know quite a bit about him. And, yeah, I'm right with you. I think just his play against the run, if that improves, boy, let's put it this way. He's going to be a force in Cincinnati for several years to come.
Yeah, he looks like the steal of the draft for them.
Paul, okay, so, you know, the Bengals have been playing kind of a do-or-die situation here for a couple weeks, and going to Cincinnati, going to Denver and getting that win was obviously a big one. They took care of business against Cleveland, which is a game both Dave and I thought maybe the Browns would I guess the game was somewhat competitive, but the Browns maybe had a chance to be in that game, and it looked like the Bengals more or less controlled it. I don't want to say they're done if they lose this game to the Steelers, but it seems like the arrow is pointing up for the Bengals, and it feels like a game where, more so, at least for me, going into the game, that I've got real concerns about this team. What do the Bengals have to do to win?
You know, I think they're going to have to pick off Ben Roethlisberger, but that's no secret. I mean, that's the key, probably to most teams that play against the Steelers, particularly in this series. So they're going to have to do that, and then, you know, I think they're going to have to get some sort of effectiveness out of Joe Mixon. But I think more than anything, they're going to have to hit a couple of deep balls. They're going to have to hit a couple over the top and get AJ Green involved, or whoever it is. that ends up making plays. They're going to have to get some splash plays over the top, pick Ben off a couple times. If that happens, the momentum starts going their way at home. I think they have a chance, but, you know, there's no guarantees of that.
Yeah. Would you pick them to win? You think they'll win this game?
No, I don't. No, I think this is Pittsburgh's game. I just think that the history where we opened this conversation, 14-2, is just this giant thing that's out there. The Steelers are just a better team right now. I don't have proof this year that the Bengals can really hang with the best in this league. Like I said, they're 1-6 against teams with more than 3 wins. They may be trending up a little bit, but they're not trending that far up. So Pittsburgh should win this game. There's a reason they're favored by 6 right now. I think they're the better team. So we'll see how it plays out.
Hey, is Marvin going to be back next year?
I don't know. He probably needs this one. He certainly needs to make some sort of run, make some sort of hay in the last 5, or else I think this is probably it.
Paul, always great to talk to you, man. Appreciate the time. I don't know if we'll get to you again this year. I don't know if these two teams are going to meet in the playoffs, but look forward to following you on Twitter, and we'll catch you down the road.
Anytime. Thanks, guys.
Okay, Dave, as always, good stuff from Paul. And, he gets to watch that team every week, and that's, you know, where we get some of our insights. You know, we try to do our film study and be up to speed on what's going on with each opponent. But a guy who sees every play from the beginning of training camp to this point in the season, I was a little surprised he wasn't a tad more positive on the Bengals and where they are, but he always gives us the straight read. So good conversation as always.
Yeah, absolutely enjoy having him on. And he's become almost like John Eisenberg there with the Ravens. I tell you, really a go-to guy. And I think he enjoys being on as well, too. We talked to him before we had him on. He seems to hear back from several of our listeners on Twitter. And make sure you reach out to these guests on Twitter and thank them for coming on. I'm sure they like to hear, good or bad. At least acknowledgement that they've been heard and all like that. So certainly do appreciate him. David, we'll obviously break down this game a little bit more, on Friday, and I'll look at a little bit more tape and whatnot. But were you a bit surprised that the Steelers opened up as 6.5-point road favorites?
I'm glad you brought that up, because I was going to tweet that. 6.5, man, I'd be taking it right now. To me, this line should be 3. It just doesn't feel right. And, again, the Steelers, they never play, they often don't play to the way we expect. So, maybe if expectations are dampened, they go out and win 31-10. But it seemed like a big number to me on the road.
Yeah.
And past history doesn't matter to me.
Yeah, I was thinking this thing might open around 3.5 or 4 with the Steelers, but 6.5. And now it has come down, I think. I think it's 5.5 last time I looked. So people probably with us, especially, look, I mean, they're supposed to beat, how many times have we seen them open up big favorites, either home or on the road this year, either lose or just not cover there. But, I was a bit surprised by that. But we'll obviously break this game down a little bit more on Friday. We'll get into the rest of the injury report, the rest of the week as well, too. We'll take a look around the NFL one more time and give you our picks for the week. What week are we in? 13, the rest of the week, 13 games as well. So shouldn't run this any longer, I guess. We've flapped and went up and down enough wormholes already. So if you'd like to follow me on Twitter at wait, one other thing. Did you see that clip I posted of
Zay Jones?
Zay Jones. I can't stop.
Moonwalking.
I can't stop watching that. I mean, the way
I was trying to figure out what he actually, just for those who didn't see it, Zay Jones goes down the left sideline toward the end zone. The ball's overthrown. He lands on his, he dives for it kind of, and you're never going to catch it, but he's on his stomach, and he kind of pushes up with his hands and a little bit with his right knee to his toes. And the best I can tell, and I know you've watched it a million times and I've watched it about 1,000 times, but he goes to his toes and then just kind of slides backwards in a way that I guarantee you have never gotten up in your life, you as in anybody listening. I had to watch it 50 times to figure out what actually happened. happened, because it really looks like he's moonwalking Michael Jackson style.
It mesmerizing. Look, my wife always kids me. I'm the easiest entertained person in the world, and these little things like this just get me. I mean, this is who's a magician? Doug. Who's the one with the curly hair? The 70s. Mystical illusionist. I can't think of his name. I'll think of it as soon as we get off here. But
Doug Henning.
Him. This kind of stuff. I mean, it just looks like he levitates right off the ground. I've got it pulled up still, David. This has been running on my computer for at least 24 hours now in an open window. I just can't stop watching this. So I'm easily entertained. And that thing.
Let's throw one other thing out there we didn't discuss is Chris Hubbard. You know, lots of concern going into that game that, you know, and this has only been one. We'll see, you know, three more without Marcus Gilbert. But Chris Hubbard certainly did fine. Wasn't a part of the problem for the Steelers on Sunday night.
Yeah, look, I mean, we'll see how he does in pass protection against Dunlap and all against the Bengals. But, I mean, he did okay that first time around. Once again, they're not going to lose games because of Chris Hubbard, I don't think. Now, if he gives up a couple of sacks and Ben gets stripped or whatnot, then obviously that'll be a talking point here. But this team can, you know, this team can win three of these four games, obviously, without Marcus Gilbert. Obviously, you want Marcus Gilbert in there when he's back, but Hubbard good in the run and sufficient in pass protection there. And of course, the whole game against New England is, you know, we got plenty of time to point fingers or praise people after that game is over. In the meantime, follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what you listen to, especially from these beat writers, reach out to them on Twitter there. Let us know. And if you want to donate to the cause, go to SteelersDepot.com, hit that donate button, upper right navigational bar. And here we are, hour and whatever again.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.